The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, as if we needed more evidence, we'll be looking at more today, showing that we are indeed living in a post-American world, certainly a post-Great Britain world as well. The sun has long since set on the British Empire, as Herbert Armstrong said, in the United States and Britain in prophecy. But in looking at the world today, as we'll look at in just a moment, again, you see America's diminishing influence and the rise of these other powers. There's other powers rushing to fill that void left by the great United States of America. Coming up in the second segment today, we'll be following up on something we touched on yesterday and wrote about in the Trumpet Brief last night on excessive television viewing and just, of course, the sordid content that you see on so many television programs today, particularly, as I said yesterday, the more edgy, the so-called edgy dramas that you get on the premium cable packages, popular shows, lots of disgusting content, and Americans and Britons are just they're lapping it up. They can't get enough of it. We've got some emails that have come in response to last night's Trumpet Brief as well, and I'll hopefully get a chance to read from a couple of those. Well, yesterday, Vladimir Putin made an unannounced visit to Syria, where he first embraced a Russian general upon disembarking, and then he embraced the Syrian dictator, Bashar al-Assad, and then followed that up with a victory celebration, declaring victory against ISIS last week. A Russian general in Syria said that Syria had been liberated completely from the Islamic State. All terrorist units of ISIS, he said, had been destroyed. And so there is Russia in Syria declaring full victory. It wasn't that long ago, if you remember, that President Obama said that this was supposed to be a quagmire for Putin. He said it back in, October of 2015. We've played this on the program before. But here's what former President Obama said in 2015.
And I said to Mr. Putin that I'd be prepared to work with him if he is willing to broker with his partners, Mr. Assad and Iran, a political transition. We can bring the rest of the world community to a brokered solution. But that a military solution alone, an attempt by Russia and Iran to prop up Assad and try to pacify the population, is just going to get them stuck in a quagmire. And it won't work. And they will be there for a while if they don't take a different course.
Well, the only thing he got right there was there at the end where he said they'd be there for a while. They have been there for a while, and they're going to stay there. He did announce yesterday, Putin did, that they could begin a partial withdrawal, but they're going to continue to establish bases, military bases in Syria. Tartus, Maimim, these two bases, they continue to operate despite the drawdown, despite the fact that they've crushed ISIS. Russia is staying. It's interesting. President Obama there talked about Putin and how he's going to have to talk with his partners, which, as he said in 2015, his partners were Assad and Iran. Now, you look at, again, the Trump administration and some of the talk from a few weeks back, Secretary of State Tillerson, when he was in Iraq, declaring victory. I guess not quite as much hoopla surrounding that visit, because as you remember, there was Rex Tillerson saying, okay, the war is over, the fighting is finished, the Iranians need to go home. And the Iranians said, no way. The Iraqis said, no way. The Iraqi PM said, no way. The Iraqi general said, no way. I mean, they're our future. Iran's our future. And so here, as recent as 2015, was a U.S. president talking about Putin, Assad, and Iran. You're all in this together. Look, you're going to have to sort this out, and we'll work with the rest in the world community to broker some kind of a solution. Now, if you stay there, you're going to get stuck in a quagmire, he said, and it won't work. Well, they did stay there, and it didn't end up as a quagmire. It ended up as a victory, and yesterday Putin was taking the victory lap. Unannounced visit, shows up in Syria. The first one to greet him, even. It's not even Assad. He was second in line. The first one to greet Mr. Putin coming off the plane was some Russian general. And then Assad, and then the parades, and then the interviews, and then the press coverage. Haaretz in Israel, covering this, said, I think this is from this morning, as Russian President Vladimir Putin landed Monday morning at Maimim Air Base in Syria, the first person to greet him as he stepped onto the tarmac was a Russian military officer. Only then was he approached by Syrian President Bashar Assad, and together they walked down the runway, passing Russian bomber jets and attack helicopters. All of these Russian armaments right there in the middle of Syria. The message, Haaretz. Haaretz is left wing. But notice this, the message was clear. The first visit to Syria in 7 years by a foreign leader wasn't a regular state visit. Putin was there to inspect Russia's latest outpost. This is Russia's newest military base in the Middle East. He was there not on an official state visit. He was there to embrace the Russian military officer. He was there to inspect Russia's latest outpost. Where are the calls from the United States, from Syria, from whoever in the Middle East? Hey, the hostilities have died down. The fighting has ended. It's time for the Russians to leave. No one's even making the call. And of course, if they even did that, there would be a similar response to Tillerson's call for the Iranians to leave. You leave. That's the response coming from these nations in the Middle East. What a contrast. When you compare the U.S. Secretary of State sitting in a chair saying the Iranians should leave just a few weeks ago to this one yesterday, this unannounced visit to Syria, right next door to Iraq. ISIS, of course, had swept across both nations, large chunks of them. And now ISIS has been crushed. And here comes Vladimir Putin. This is the first visit to Syria in 7 years by a foreign leader. That's something else. Haaretz says he may have taken the opportunity to announce that Russia is to begin withdrawing most of its troops from Syria, but that was mainly a statement for domestic consumption. Back home, the idea of a foreign war isn't very popular. On the ground in Syria, though, the message was very different. Russia now has its permanent base in the Middle East. And just because the battle against the Islamic State is winding down, that doesn't mean the Russian aircraft will be leaving anytime soon. How about that? Is the United States establishing any kind of a permanent base in Syria or Iraq or anywhere else for that matter in the Middle East? Here is Russia Vladimir Putin's Russia establishing a permanent base in the Middle East. It says further on, 27 months since the Russian deployment in Syria began, no one has any illusions that, as far as the Kremlin is concerned, this has been a resounding success. Well, so much for the quagmire. This has been a resounding success. There were expectations that this foreign intervention in a Mideast war would end in tears, as so many previous ones had, but not this time. Yes, indeed, there were expectations. The President of the United States himself said, look, this is going to end in a quagmire. It won't work. It won't work. Putin better decide on a different course. That was a statement the U.S. president made just a little over 2 years ago. And look at the world today, 2 years later. What you're viewing is the post-American Middle East. In fact, we put a video together on that. I noticed that on the website earlier today. We prepared a video on that very subject 4 years ago. Ron Fraser, the late Ron Fraser, he had an article at the Trumpet, 2008, Post-American Global Order Emerges. And then some of you might remember the Trumpet cover. I think it was in early 2014, January or February. Life After America. We're watching it unfold. We're seeing it in real time. Who could have imagined this? Even as recent as 5-10 years ago. No American base in Syria or Iraq or anywhere to speak of in the Middle East. And two well-established ones in Syria for Russia, for Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin making an unannounced visit to a Russian base in Syria. Getting off the plane and embracing a Russian military officer. Surrounded by Russian bomber jets and attack helicopters. This is what the world looks like. This is what the Middle East looks like in the post-American world. Where's this leading? Jesus, of course, had a lot to say about the latter days, Matthew 24, and other prophecies. Deutsche Welle had a piece today, I think, or yesterday, about Russia's wartime president, Vladimir Putin. He's coming up to an election, by the way, and it's looking like he might win. He's going to be in there for a long time to come. The wartime president. Deutsche Welle said in early November, several Russian media outlets, including Moscow's Independent, Novaya Gazeta, reported that Russia has received unexpected orders to prepare for war. They're gearing up for war, Russia is. Oh, this is going to be a quagmire. Russia's economy can't sustain it. It won't work. That's what the experts were saying. That's what President Obama was saying. And yet, who can deny? Now, looking at it today, who can deny that this has been a resounding success for the Kremlin, for Moscow? And here they are, building up armaments for war. They're preparing for war. True News has a piece here about Russia forging a stronger alliance with China. What does your Bible have to say about that? The Russian-Chinese alliance. We have a booklet that goes by that very title, Russia and China in Prophecy. This article talks about this being an absolute priority for Russian foreign policy. Here are their top military officials meeting together and announcing that they intend to further develop their budding military relationship. That's from this article. And meanwhile, in Europe, you have Well, the official launching of the European Military Union. That's from GermanForeignPolicy.com. Just today, the German government, it's always the German government taking the lead. The German government has announced that the EU Military Union will be officially launched this Monday, with the European Council formally adopting 17 projects aimed at creating joint EU military structures. It says further on, Berlin is also establishing logistical structures that would facilitate rapid interventions. The German Bundeswehr is also active in both fields within the NATO framework. The operational preparation for future military missions is influenced by a fierce power struggle between Germany and France. Well, we know that Germany will win that struggle. Germany's going to come out on top. Germany will lead the way, just like it has with the economy. German foreign policy says, according to the German Ministry of Defense, the military union is not only aimed at reaching more independence from the United States, but also at advancing EU integration, which is difficult to achieve with civilian means. And we've got to further integrate. We've got to bring these nations together. There's another piece at German foreign policy about Europe at a crossroads. This one here says the organizers of the Munich Security Conference, one of the world's most important military policy conferences, are urging that the EU's transformation into a war alliance be accelerated. Why would Europe need to build up this war alliance? Why does Europe need a united military union? Well, look at what Russia's doing. There's some history here. Germany's well aware of it, and so is Russia. Russia's preparing for war. Germany's calling upon the member states of the European Union to come together militarily. And even in Germany, which, as you know, there's a lot of political turmoil right now because Angela Merkel can't get together a coalition. She's trying to come together with the Social Democrat leader now, Martin Schulz. This is the leader of the Social Democratic Party, or the Social Democrat Party. And he's now calling for a United States of Europe. This is not the leader from the AfD. This is not even Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg. This is Martin Schulz. 61-year-old Martin Schulz, the Social Democrat, at a rally just a few days ago, saying that Europe needed a new vision. He's calling for the expulsion of all countries that do not want to be part of the United States of Europe. And according to the Times of London here, this caught Mrs. Merkel by surprise. Here again, she's trying to reform this grand coalition between her party and the SPD. And here is the leader of the SPD calling for a United States of Europe. That's like, as you know, that's language right out of the plain truth from 1950 or so. Deutsche Welle says here, if the overwhelming response was anything to go by, the Social Democrats seem largely united on the issue of a United States of Europe, that is. Unlike the evident division a day earlier over whether they should enter exploratory coalition talks with Chancellor Angela Merkel and her conservatives. Well, we don't know for sure if we want to enter into a coalition with Merkel's party, but what we do know is we want a United States of Europe. It's coming. It's coming soon. Herbert Armstrong wrote, he wrote this article back in 1961, it's from The Plain Truth, about the giant world power to rise out of the common market in Europe, a United States of Europe. And he said in this article that three developments in particular have brought this on or have given this movement momentum. He talked about how that many European nations had previously maintained prosperity by their colonies in Africa and Asia, but that now those colonies have either been given up or lost. And he also talked in this article about the two world wars from the 20th century, the material and the moral destruction brought on by those two great wars. Of course, a lot of that material destruction has long since been rebuilt. The ruins have been raised, so to speak. But then he also mentioned that the scientific and economic upward surges of both the United States and Russia, together with the Cold War political developments. This is Mr. Armstrong again writing in 1961. But this is the Europe, or rather the world that Europe was in at the time, and how that it left Europe as this group of disunited, helpless small nations caught between these two powerful military giants. So he talked about these developments hastening along the fulfillment of Revelation 17 and other prophecies. Mr. Armstrong writes here, so just put yourself in the place of these people in Europe. They see their source of former prosperity torn from them. They see two prosperous world powers, one on each side of them, squeezing them in the middle. Up until now, these many little European nations have relied on the United States military and nuclear power to restrain the hungry Russian bear from devouring them. But United States prestige is being rapidly dragged in the dust and trampled down. And we talked about this decline in U.S. power and prestige last night in the trumpet brief. So many things factoring into that. But look at the content on television as just one of the factors. And then look at the world today. It's a post-American Middle East. It's a post-American world. A post-American global order. It's a much different world than even in 1961. And Europe still has a rising power, a menace to the East. And in the case of the United States, well, you have an administration in Washington now that's telling Europe, look, you fend for yourself. You're on your own. We can't keep funding these operations, these international operations, NATO and the like. Well, going back to what Mr. Armstrong said, it said, all this leaves the nations of Europe uneasy. They have been taking a good look at themselves, and what do they see? They see many nations, each small compared to the mighty Soviet Union at their border, yet, if joined together as one empire, possessing potential greater population, greater industrial and economic capacity, greater military power than either Russia or America, and yet here they are, robbed of their former source of prosperity, helpless. And why? Simply because they are divided. No one country by itself is strong enough to protect itself. And so thus you have calls, even now coming from the Social Democrat leader, a United States of Europe, and German foreign policy reporting today, the EU military union to be officially launched this Monday, this week, within the week. These 10 kings, as Revelation 17 says, these 10 nations, they're coming together. These 10 toes. Well, later on in the article, Mr. Armstrong talks about commentators and leaders in Europe, how hard the European leaders have worked to try to build this empire. He goes back through some important history and then says here, they did not know what I know or what I knew back in 1934. I knew then that they were going to unite and resurrect the old Roman Empire. I had seen it in biblical prophecy. I knew it was sure. He says, but these nations know nothing of biblical prophecy. They have no They have no diabolical and evil thought in mind about creating the prophesied beast that is to fight against Christ at his return. They are natural, carnal-minded people who have only what they think of as the good motive of looking after their own welfare and interests. You see, that's what's motivating them. Martin Schulz or whoever, I mean, they think this is for our own self-interest. This is for our own good, our own protection. We need this. Or in the case of Germany leading the way with a united military, we need this. Not only because the U.S. is abandoning us, we need this to carry out our objectives as far as foreign policy is concerned. We need this as an extension of our foreign policy. Full military union. They don't see where it's headed. Russia doesn't see where it's leading. The leaders in the United States, in Washington, in London, in Britain, they don't see where this is leading. But we do, thanks to Bible prophecy. One last little item here from Deutsche Welle. Weapon sales up worldwide. It says here, arms sales are increasing around the world. Munitions, tanks, drones. The global trade in arms and military services increased again in 2016. It was up 1.9% on the previous year. And 38% compared to 2002. 38% increase. Just compared to, what is that, 15 years ago. Jesus said there would be great tribulation just before he returns to this earth. Just before, as Zechariah 14 says, he sets foot on the Mount of Olives, and the nations then assemble together to fight against him with all of these armaments, all of these munitions and tanks and drones and such. That's where this is leading. But of course, Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God will overpower this force, this worldwide force, and then set up God's kingdom on earth, headquartered in Jerusalem. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments, as always, to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
You're living in terrifying times, and you probably don't realize it. You're just so interested in this apparent time of peace, and you like to get it out of your mind, and it's a time when we can have mechanical and material luxuries and gadgets and things, and we're so interested in those things. We're so self-centered in our own selves and other people and the things that our hands can make, in human interests, in television, in the new kind of movies that are coming out, in everything to amuse and entertain ourselves. We don't realize how empty our lives are either.
That's Herbert Armstrong from his old radio program, one on the subject of the United States in prophecy. And of course, he was saying that decades ago. We've played that clip for you before. Last night, we sent a trumpet brief out, basically, just bringing together some material we've written over the years on this subject of the gadgets and the amusements and the pleasure-seeking, the entertainment, not realizing, as he said there, not realizing as we consume all of this just how empty our lives are. And also, as he indicated there at the start of that clip, not realizing just how terrifying these times are. I got a response from one of you following that trumpet brief last night. She says, thank you for this wonderful article. You certainly hit home when you spoke on our television viewing habits. Personally, I fight a daily battle with this piece of equipment. There's always the temptation to turn it on just for a few minutes. And let me tell you that it never works out that way. I find myself wasting hours. So I simply try not to turn it on at all, even when I'm tempted to do so. I fill the time with better things, such as Bible study, letter writing, house cleaning and the like. And I must say, I feel much more productive. But it is still a daily battle, no matter. The temptation is there, ready to strike at any time. But thank you so much for your article. I truly appreciate it. God bless you and your staff. Keep up the great work and keep fighting the good fight. Another one here says, you're so right. Time is exceedingly short. May God help us urgently to fill our hearts with the good news vision of His words on every subject in our daily life. Thank you so much for the daily news updates and the moral vitamin doses we desperately need. May God bless you, the staff, and your family with precious blessings. Let me just take you through. I've got a couple more clips here I'll play in a moment, but let me just take you through a few verses here to complete this study. I mentioned yesterday as I was hurrying to put together that first segment there at the last, that it made me think of this article that Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1955, and then he had another one in 1981. I quoted from them later on yesterday when I put together that trumpet brief. But I've since the program yesterday, I've had some time to assemble some of the material we've used in years past. But as I was bringing out in the trumpet brief, when you look at what television and the movies and all of that, what they churn out today, just a flood of illicit sex and graphic violence, that's what so much of it boils down to. And if you think about the award season, all these award presentations or shows, every year, it seems, the so-called edgy content, it just gets worse. The violence gets more and more graphic to where, like in the case of the Game of Thrones, you have scenes of rape on television, glorifying rape. And it's supposed to be entertainment of all things. It's just a reflection of the world we live in. That's what they were saying about the previous president in 2013. Well, I mean, this is what President Obama has to deal with day in and day out. So you can't blame him for wanting to relax with this kind of content. It was sort of an opportunity for him to reflect on the day. That's the way the New York Times presented it in 2013. Like, we need this. We need this to unwind. We need to fill our minds with this kind of content. God has a different opinion. God says, fill your mind with the things of God. Philippians 4, 8. Colossians 3, 1 and 2. Matthew 6, 33. But as for this world, we're living in an evil world, Paul said. Galatians 1, 4. Satan's the god of it. 2 Corinthians 4, 4. The whole world is deceived. In 2 Timothy 3, and verse 13, it says, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, That's why the edgiest of content just keeps getting a little bit worse and more graphic each and every year. Well, Paul said, this is going now to Ephesians 4. Let me just read to you this one verse, Ephesians 4 and verse 1. Paul says here, I therefore, the prisoner of the eternal, so he was in jail for proclaiming the truth of God. And he says to God's people, I beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called. Our calling is a vocation. It's a job that God's given us to do. We have a job to be an example for the world, to be a light to this world. Matthew 5, verses 13 to 16. How much can the people of this world learn about God and His character and His way of life just by observing those of us who are in God's church, those of us who are supporting God's work? What does it mean to walk worthy of our calling, our vocation? In Hebrews 3, it's called a profession. How much time do you have to put into a career to be a real professional? It takes many hours each day. Jesus said, look, this way of life, the way of a Christian, it's a profession. Our hearts have to be in it. We have to put in the time. We can't let Satan or the distractions of this world steal away our precious time, rob us of the time we need to be putting in to our vocation, to our calling, to our profession. It's a way of life. It's a profession, as Mr. Armstrong says here in this next clip. This is clip two.
The Christian life, my friends, is a calling. It's a profession. And it must be the one overpowering concern and interest in our lives. Right now, many, many of you are permitting a marvelous invention to be put to a wrong use. Television. Television in itself is a good thing. It can be put to a very wonderful use. But my friends, like everything else, television can be put to a wrong use or an overuse. You know, God's way is temperance in all things, and a lot of people are not very temperate when it comes to television. I was absolutely shocked when I learned that one of the great rating agencies has given the report that the average family and the average home spent 5.5 hours every day sitting before a television set. Now, that is entirely too much, my friends, when you're just being amused and entertained. I don't think that in present programming you can sit 5.5 hours in front of a television set every day, 30 or 31 days a month, 7 days a week, and see things that are really of vital educational value, that are helpful, that are going to help build your life and make you a better Christian. And I don't think you believe it either.
We don't believe it. We know it's wrong. And yet, like that person who emailed me said, it's still a strong pull. There's so many better things to do. There's so much more we could accomplish. But still that temptation is there. Mr. Armstrong came out strongly against it. Here again, he's saying what you just heard there decades ago. But as he wrote in that coworker letter from 1955, this is the one I quoted from in the Trumpet brief last night, he mentioned how that there were so many people interested in God's truth back in the 1950s, right as television was coming on the scene, reading the plain truth, studying the booklets, setting up a ministerial visit with one of the ministers of God's church. And then responding to those visits, that initial response, by saying, well, you know, I don't really have as much time to focus on the truth anymore. I don't really have much time to study those booklets like I used to. I can't really listen to Mr. Armstrong on the radio like I used to. Why? Well, because we have television now. Because I have to watch television. And Mr. Armstrong said, look, consider what this means. You're admitting indirectly that you don't have time for Christ, that you don't have time for the true gospel, that you don't have time to study the Word of God. And it's all because of worldly entertainment, which, as I mentioned yesterday, just keeps getting worse and worse. Mr. Armstrong said in that 1955 letter that what you're really saying is that you serve and devote yourself to the pleasing entertainment of the world instead of Christ's true gospel message. You're saying, I'm neglecting Christ and this great salvation, to paraphrase Hebrews 2. I'm passing up on eternity, an eternity of glory, so that I can feast on the sordid scenes playing out on television, playing out on the big screen, murder and the like, illicit sex, crime and violence. At best, just worthlessness, idleness, a ready-made daydream. There's plenty of that in the world today, and precious, precious few co-workers with Christ. Co-workers serving God in the shallows. I think it was Nicholas Carr who wrote that. He said, most Americans, no matter what their age, spend at least 8.5 hours a day looking at television, a computer monitor, or the screen of their mobile phone. Frequently, they use two or even all three of the devices simultaneously. I mean, we've all seen it. And if truth be told, we've all done it. One screen after another screen after another screen. And of course, like Mr. Armstrong said in that clip I just played, I mean, these are marvelous inventions. But they're just being put to so much wrong use. Pleasure seeking. That's what Paul said about our last days, the dangerous days we're living in, where men would be lovers of their own selves, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, looking for every pleasing, stimulating sensation. Paul said in verse 5 of 2 Timothy 3, it has a form of godliness, but it denies the power thereof. From such, turn away. See, you've got to turn away from it. Or in the case of TV, just not even turn it on. It has its place. There's some quality programming from time to time. But not as much as there should be, not near enough. And here is God's work, whether on TV or radio or on the website, just crying out, crying aloud. And yet how many are listening? How many are listening for God's truth? How many are tuning in because they need God's truth, because they hunger and thirst for it? Just like I read to you yesterday from that Psalm, Psalm 83. King David, his life revolved around God. He woke up in the middle of the night and he just craved the words, the precious truth of God, meditating on God's way of life. He had to make time for it. It's not something that just comes natural. It didn't just come natural to David. In fact, there was an instance late in his life. He obviously learned a lot when going through the trial he brought on himself with Bathsheba and her husband and committing murder and adultery and then carrying on in his sin for some 9 months before God finally brought his prophet to David, and brought David face to face with his sin. And David really mastered repentance when going through that ordeal, but then later in life, he made another mistake, numbering the army, counting the army, putting his faith more in the size of Israel's army than in God himself. So this is not something that just, you know, you just wake up and, well, it's easy to pour your heart into prayer, into study, into serving God in this work. You have to set your mind on the things above, like Paul said. You have to put on Christ. You have to get down on your knees and pray to God. And not just pray, but pray fervently. As Herbert Armstrong said, I mean, he never knew of a prayer, a half-hearted prayer. He never knew of one getting answered. So it's got to be fervent. But if we will fervently and effectually cry out to God and really put in the time that we need to put in, the fruit that comes from that, Orison and Swett Martin, just to go back to this point about it being a vocation or a profession, as Paul said, he wrote in his book, Pushing to the Front, he said, 1 hour a day, withdrawn from frivolous pursuits and profitably employed, would enable any man of ordinary capacity to master a complete science. 1 hour a day would in 10 years make an ignorant man a well-informed man. An hour a day might make all the difference between bare existence and useful, happy living. An hour a day might make, nay, has made, an unknown man, a famous one, a useless man, a benefactor to his race. That's just 1 hour a day. He's not even talking about pouring your heart into Bible study and prayer. He's just talking about some useful endeavor. Studying a complete science. It says here, consider then the mighty possibilities of 2, 4, yes, 6 hours a day that are on average thrown away by a young man, by young men and women in the restless desire for fun and diversion. I mean, we've had all of these labor-saving devices. We've had all of these labor-saving devices added to our life, our lifestyle in these last days. Just think of the time that's saved in simple household tasks like washing clothes or dishes or making bread, any of these things. Compare it to how it was done 100, 200, 300 years ago. How much faster these kinds of things can be done today. How much time they're saving. And yet when you talk to people about the commitment that it takes to obey God and to serve God, many would protest immediately saying, well, I just don't have the time. I don't have time for that. What is it that we have time for? What is it that we make time for? Mr. Armstrong said in another program from long ago, this is clip 3.
You know, just passing time, my friends. Time's going to be up pretty soon, and your life will be over. And whatever you have, you're not going to take with you except one thing. And there is one thing that you can accumulate and acquire in this life that you will have forever, and that is real, righteous, holy, spiritual character.
That's all that we take with us into God's kingdom. We're not going to take all of those edgy dramas. We can't take our TV set or our laptop or our mobile phone with us into God's kingdom. I mean, God will make use of the technology that's there in some form or fashion with people in the wonderful world tomorrow. But when you think about the content that's going to be displayed on those devices in the wonderful world tomorrow, what a time that will be when no matter when or where you turn on the TV or the computer, And of course, no one's just going to consume it to the point of excessively wasting away their life with the excessive consumption of media. But what a time it will be when the proper balance is restored, when discipline is common, when the content on those devices is godly and upbuilding, when those marvelous technologies are used the way that they should be used and not abused. But as far as this life goes, what we take with us is character. What God preserves and holds on to for that glorified state when we're resurrected into the family of God is righteous spiritual character. One last clip from Mr. Armstrong, clip 4.
I tell you, my friends, we're going along trying to enjoy all these modern gadgets, trying to sit 6 hours a day being amused and entertained and taken off to some kind of a happy dreamland to get our minds off of reality, to escape the fact and reality of life, to hide our minds from what is coming so that we could do something about it and prevent it. An average American family, just think of it now, spending 6 hours a day before television sets, being amused and entertained. You know, all of these inventions in themselves are all right, they're good. Television can become a very wonderful thing, as a matter of fact. Think of the power of radio, and now television even goes further because you not only hear the sound, you also see. You see and hear at the same time. Television brings across its message, whatever it may be, with terrific impact, both through sight and sound simultaneously. Very effective medium. But what are we doing with it? How are we using it? Oh, just to while away our time, to amuse and entertain ourselves, most of us. Listen, it brings with it a tremendous responsibility on your part. And it's going to require a little bit of self-control and guidance over your children, over your own selves, as to whether you use it wisely. Are your children sitting away there in the daytime hours with their legs crossed and getting a warped position? They're going to grow up looking crooked and deformed, looking at TV when they ought to be out running around playing in the fresh air sometimes. Now, there are some programs that are very beneficial and educational for children. Television can be used as one of the greatest educational mediums that ever came, just the same as radio, only even more so and more effectively. But what are we doing with our modern inventions?
What are we doing with those modern inventions? Some wise instruction there, coming from Herbert Armstrong, about the tremendous responsibility we have to use these technologies wisely, to exercise self-control, to provide guidance for our children, for our families, for ourselves. Paul said in Hebrews 2, therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. Give the more earnest heed to these precious truths, to this God-inspired instruction. For, as verse 3 says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? I mean, it's been confirmed to us by God's servants, by God's teachers, his apostles and prophets. But how can we escape if we neglect this salvation? So great, it says. So great. Going back to that 1955 piece, Mr. Armstrong said, yes, dear co-workers, this thudding realization that many of our co-workers, so many that the very life of God's work has been threatened, have been unthinkingly allowing themselves to become so absorbed in foolish, time-wasting, worldly entertainment that it is crowding out their zeal for Christ. It's crowding out their zeal for Christ. We can't neglect so great salvation. The Apostle Peter said, to give diligence to make our calling and election sure. Make it sure. Make it certain. As I've played for you here today, the Christian life is one of passionate, zealous, overpowering purpose. Our heart has to be in it. It has to have first place on the priority list, just like I covered yesterday. It can't be a little side interest. It can't be something that you just do on the side. It's a calling, remember. It's a profession, remember. It's a vocation. And so give diligence to make that calling and that election, that profession, that vocation, sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.